Search for the WICC 600 app on your smartphone and listen to Lisa anywhere. The Lisa Wexler Show is back on WICC 600.
Welcome back to the show today. Good morning. We're following up on our coverage of what's happening statewide with a slew of different zoning bills that are coming from finance, transportation, planning and zoning, housing, all different ways in which to basically wrest a lot of local control, put it back up to Hartford, have Hartford decide in many cases what these buildings are going to look like. That's part of it. They want to have a design committee where they have these master plans of what our buildings should look like. They want to displace some language in local zoning codes, particularly zoning codes that talk about considering the character of one's community. That's out in the latest bill from one of the committees, and essentially mandating as of right kinds of building in neighborhoods and suburban places where this kind of thing would normally have to go in front of a hearing for a special permit application and be decided by local people that are volunteers that are elected by you in your own town. So Alexis Harrison and Kathy Braun, Kathy's an attorney. The two of them have been trying to first raise the flag of paying attention to these bills, and then second, trying to get our legislators to tell us how they will vote on them. And then third, I think, trying to advocate that these bills are not in the best interests of the people of Connecticut. They join us now to report on a rally that they organized on Saturday morning in Fairfield. Welcome back to the show, Alexis Harrison and Kathy Braun. Hello and good morning.
Good morning. And thank you, Lisa, for keeping this issue front and center. It's really important to have, you know, your voice on this.
So, Alexis, tell us about Saturday morning. How many people came? Who spoke? Tell us about it.
Yeah, it was a really, you know, great, you know, groundswell of support for local zoning. We had about 70 people there in Fairfield, and we had a number of legislators there. We had a zoning official there from West Haven who spoke about these bills and just how bad they are for Connecticut. You know, no one questions that, you know, Connecticut needs, you know, nuanced solutions to help with affordability, but we also need to do it right, and we need to do it with all stakeholders at the table. And we also have to have zoning laws that really, you know, reflect the unique characteristics of our unique, you know, towns and cities, you know, throughout Connecticut. We have farm towns, we have cities, we have, you know, large towns like Fairfield. So, and we're also just trying to, we were there to educate folks. There were people there who don't know what's going on in Hartford right now. You know, people are, you know, are just not focused on the activities of Hartford. They're focused on, you know, life is busy with the COVID. So we're really just trying to stay focused and educate people in our communities.
So let me ask you this. Who are the representatives of Fairfield, Alexis, and how are each of them publicly standing with respect to this issue?
Sure. Senator Tony Wong and Representative Laura Devlin have really been, you know, trying to raise awareness of the zoning bills. And I mean, you've had Tony on several times, and he really wants to ensure that zoning remains local and in the hands of the communities. And he's really done an outstanding job of trying to educate not just Fairfield, but all the other communities throughout Connecticut on these bills, because a lot of representatives are not talking. We also have State Representative Kristen McCarthy-Vahey, State Rep Jennifer Leeper, and Kristen, she's actually the chairwoman of the Planning and Development Committee, who's overseeing a lot of these bills.
Jennifer Leeper is a first term. She's been on our show a couple of times. She's in her freshman term as a representative, and she's a Democrat. Where does she stand on this? Have you been able to ask her? Is she on any of these relevant committees? Has she voted yet with respect to drafts of this legislation?
No, she did actually hold a forum in town last week, which was great. It was great to finally hear her voice on this. From what I heard on that discussion, she was not in favor of SB 1024, you know, the so-called Desegregate Connecticut bill. And it sounded like she was potentially in favor of HB 6611, which mandates towns to build the so-called fair share of affordable units. That's what I heard from her.
So that's a Democrat. And the question is whether or not she'll split with her party majority on this, which, you know, we'll find out. But what, tell us about 6611, this other bill that hasn't gotten as much attention as the first one. What does that bill say?
So I think from what I understand, and Kathy, you're also been studying this too, I think it mandates towns to basically almost triple the amount of units that they have. From what I understand, it eliminates the need for aggrieved parties to have legal standing when it comes to zoning. And it obligates the court to play a bigger role for enforcement of affordable housing development. I think these fair share calculations are pretty flawed. And they're making the allocated units completely unachievable. Our larger group, CT169 Strong, we have actually a lot of information on this bill, so go to CT169strong.org. But again, another flawed bill that deserves, you know, equal amount of attention.
It's I see the flaw in another light as a lawyer and a zoning commissioner. I see it as being horribly complex. And having it devolve into, if we think 8-30G is sort of a litigation generator, I see this as being local zoning run by land courts at some point. And I see it as being a horribly burdensome combination, micromanaging and vague way of imposing mandates on towns, unfunded mandates. I don't see it as being workable at all the way it is. It can't pass. I hope we can convince everybody of all stripes, all political stripes, that this makes no sense.
Okay, so you had about 70 people come on Saturday. You had some legislators show up. Jennifer Leeper may or may not be in favor of one or more of these bills or opposed to them, and you're trying to let her know that you think at least a certain percentage of her constituency is watching her vote on this. And with respect to Christine Vahey, she is one of the sponsors of, I believe it's 1024, but correct me if I'm wrong. And she is the leader of, is it the planning and zoning committee or the planning and housing?
Planning and development. And Kristen, you know, we've known her a long time, and she keeps saying she does have an open mind about these bills, which is good. But what has troubled me a bit, and she has been standing with Desegregate Connecticut, which is one of these organizations that has been pushing SB 1024.
Tell me about Desegregate Connecticut, because my understanding is that you did a Freedom of Information Act request because you wanted to do a little bit of digging and investigating. You felt that newspapers, frankly, hadn't been doing this kind of work, and so you decided to do it yourself. So let's hear what you discovered. Okay, good for you, Alexis. You're a citizen. Let's hear.
I was a journalist in another life, so... going back at it. In any case, Desegregate Connecticut is they call themselves a coalition of groups. They're not really a nonprofit based on what we see, or they, quite frankly, I don't even think they exist on paper. And it was founded by Sarah Bronin, who is the First Lady of Hartford, the wife of Luke Bronin. She is a lawyer. She is an architect. You know, she's a very accomplished professional. And from what we see, she kind of drew this line of the George Floyd murder to zoning, and has made it a point to really change the zoning laws in Connecticut to make them so-called more diverse, more affordable, if you will. And she has been working extremely hard with this coalition of groups to get this message across. They're saying that our laws in Connecticut are segregated. To me, which I personally find offensive, that any one of us would want to be a party to that, and I think that's quite frankly wrong. So we're just trying to understand who the Desegregate organization is, based on our research, and that's what led me to do the FOI request. They don't exist on paper. They were not a registered lobbyist until April 1st of this year. But we know these bills have been in place for a while now, way before April 1st. So we're really trying to understand who is influencing our lawmakers. It seems to me that she's had a seat at the table for many months now. And it's our view that without transparency in the process, there's no accountability. We should, we live in an open government where we value transparency in deliberation when it comes to creating new laws. And I personally have not seen that here, which is why I want to learn more. Who are they? Who's influencing our lawmakers? I'm not a lobbyist. I mean, I'm not a lobbyist expert by any means, so I'm just trying to understand the connection.
So let me understand this. Connecticut has a law, like many states, that requires lobbyists to be registered as such because the public has an interest in knowing who meets with lawmakers and who tries to influence them in their legislation. And Desegregate Connecticut has certainly been mentioned in a lot of newspaper articles, and they've been holding forums. They held a big one in Greenwich, all about, as you said, their plans to shape legislation in order to create more affordable housing. And they have a very definite point of view. Okay.
They're a sophisticated group. They're a very sophisticated group. It's not just a website. They have a great deal of data. They have a high level PR machine. They're on every social media platform. They're organizing events and interviews. So who are they? I mean, they obviously are having a lot of say. I mean, as you said, every media outlet is calling it the Desegregate Connecticut bill. Who is Desegregate Connecticut?
We did a little research, and because we want to know who's writing our bills, because it didn't just start this year. Last year, there was a bill called HB 5132, which basically incorporated much or all of the platform of this group in that. Now, that didn't go through because of the pandemic year. We had a special session, et cetera. But the law requires that you register to be a lobbyist before you commence lobbying activities. And if you spend $3,000, you're supposed to register as a lobbyist on lobbying activities. And we don't know what their activities were. There's nothing on paper. I do see today on the state website, they have numbers up there. They didn't have numbers up there a couple days ago. So they finally registered on April 1st. And I don't know who they are because they're not a corporation as far as I could tell. They're not a nonprofit as far as I could tell. They're not a charity. They're not registered as anything. They don't exist. They're a coalition of people. And there's a couple of her team from the website that now are listed as lobbyists, but they weren't listed as lobbyists until April 1st or so, or this year. So we don't know what money came into this effort last year to develop all these bills, because the bills here now were started to be developed last summer.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the money come from? Where's the money go to?
So from your point of view, as citizens, as activists, as a lawyer, as a journalist, from your point of view, what do you conclude from learning that at this late date, Desegregate Connecticut decided to register formally as a lobbyist? Is this something that you think our legislators ought to consider when they vote? Is this something that you think requires further investigation? What do you conclude from finding this out?
That if they think they're a lobbyist now, I don't know how much money they spent last year, because I didn't track their website as it grew over the year, but they must have spent more than $3,000. Don't know, but there's no way of finding out because they didn't register till this year. And I don't think they have to file reports for last year. So the bottom line is we need to know how they're funded, who they are. They're not an LLC or a corporation. They're not a 501c3. They're not a charity. So I don't know who they are. On their website, there's a coalition of team members, but the only one who really speaks for them is one person, the founding person. So all these other people maybe signed on and let their logo be put on the website. I don't know what their involvement is, but I don't hear from them as being spokespeople for the group.
Yeah, and another thing, I don't have any direct conclusions right now, just a lot of questions. It's like peeling an onion. And one other thing I want to know is if you go to the Desegregate Connecticut website and you hit donate, it brings you to a page and you actually donate to the Regional Plan Association, which is, you know, a longtime, nonprofit organization dedicated to housing.
Very well
known.
You're
not even giving money to Desegregate Connecticut. You're giving it to RPA, which I believe is based in New York.
Correct.
We don't know what they're doing.
I know the Regional Plan Association for many years, and they tend to look at things on a multi-generational, in other words, like a 30-year, 30,000-foot level about what our region needs. They're a very well-respected organization, actually.
Absolutely.
So that's interesting. So that's really very interesting. I'm listening to, and you know what? You know what's interesting to me as I'm sort of cogitating about all this? We're chatting with Kathy Braun and Alexis Harrison. You know, I always wonder when you have such dramatic changes that are being proposed, is it top down or bottom up? Because I think that, and some obviously are a combination of both, But we know, and this is true for Republicans as well as Democrats, that, and you can ask the state of Georgia, for example, we know that there are a lot of outside groups that decide to make a test case of a state, a policy, because they want to start a precedent that they can then say, oh, look, Connecticut did that. Let's do that here. And so I always wonder, where is it coming from? And that's the value of our compulsory disclosure lobbyist laws, right? That's the value to the average citizen. Who's influencing our legislators so that we can look at it as citizens and voters, and we can say, is this coming from a group that has an agenda that is looking for a test case? Or is this coming from a bottom-up situation where citizens have truly been unhappy with their own communities and they want to change? Where is this coming from? And I think that's of great value.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, it's not coming from the environmental sector. I can tell you that.
Well, yeah. And I think that, you see, that's the point. I always want to ask our legislators who are intending to vote on things, have you taken a survey of your constituency? Have you taken a poll? Right? Has Will Haskell, who is still only serving his second term, has he taken a poll of the 26th to know how many voters in his district are in favor of this bill in transportation that he, as a newly leader of the Transportation Committee, led out of committee? Or is this his gut feeling about what he thinks is right for the district, and he's willing to say, okay, either they agree with me or not, I'm leading on this? And that's certainly true of some of our legislators at certain times in their career. But I just, it's a lot. It's an awful lot for all of us to absorb, to understand. And as you say, in this time of COVID, where we've had so much else to worry about, really worry about, this is sort of coming, woo, woo. So
it's really fast and furious.
Thanks for doing all this. It is fast and furious. So let me ask you, what's the action step for our listeners? If they agree with your point of view, what would you have them do?
I ask everybody, I call on everybody to contact their state representatives and state senators. You know, on Saturday at the rally, we had Patrick Sasser at the rally, and he spoke about the importance of grassroots activism. Patrick, well, he stopped tolls from not coming to Connecticut. He knows it well. And he told us, he said, a legislator once told him, once he gets emails from 50 or so constituents, he starts to pay attention and wakes up. So keep hammering it at the email. Keep talking to your state reps and state senator. They are, the arbiters here. Help them, tell them that you don't want this.
So let me just tell our audience, because it's not immediately obvious to anyone. If you don't know who your state rep is or your state senator, all you have to do is literally put into your browser, whether it's, Outlook or whatever you use, Chrome, whatever you use, Bing, whatever the heck you use. I use Chrome, but some people use Safari on their iPhone. And you just put in your browser Connecticut State Government. You can even just write it out. The first link is going to take you to your government. And there is a thing, if you read it, that says find your representative. And if you click on that, all you have to do is put in your address. And it pops up, this is your state rep, this is your state senator. And then it even pops up with their contact information. So there's a lot of people in our listening audience, a lot of people around the state, who really don't know who represent them. And it's not obvious to people who represent them. Believe me, they have a lot of other things to pay attention to. So if this is something you care about, and we're talking about basically retaining or ceding local control over how many units of multifamily can be built in your town, or of whether or not your zoning commission can look at the character of your community in making a decision, or looking at whether or not if you're near a railroad, how much development can come there, or deciding that the state EPA, which we call the DEEP, D-E-E-P, Department of Environmental Protection, one of these bills says that DEEP can't even render an opinion as to the environmental impact on a multifamily building in your town. If you care about any of these issues, if you're coming from environment or density or whatever it is your issue, you need to look up who your local state rep and state senator is. And you can do that on the state of Connecticut government website. And they'll tell you, just plug in your address. So, ladies, Kathy Braun and Alexis Harrison, thank you very much for joining us. Let us know, do you have any more upcoming gatherings on this for this week?
Yes.
What is your agenda?
Absolutely. So upcoming this Saturday, still working out location logistics, but in West Haven, we will be holding our next rally. Go to ct169strong.org for latest information on that. And there's lots of research and data on that website, too, that really drills down on the bill. So if your legislator isn't telling you about the bills, go to ct169strong.org. Lots of good information there.
Thank you very much, Kathy Braun. Thank you, Kathy Braun and Alexis Harrison, ct169strong.org. Thanks so much for joining us today. You're listening to the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600 at 203-333-9422. We'll be right back.